Welcome to the Actual Fluency Podcast. Each week you'll find inspirational, motivational interviews with some of the world's best language learners, industry experts, all trying to help you to learn foreign languages better, faster, and more efficiently. And here we go. If you're looking for a language teacher to enhance your language learning, then I highly recommend Italki. Italki is the world's biggest tutoring platform, and you can find thousands of teachers and tutors at very reasonable prices. Get a free lesson after completing your first lesson by going to languageteacher.co. Hello everyone, and welcome back to the Actual Fluency Podcast. Really excited to be back with another episode for you. And today, the first thing, I just wanted to chat for a few minutes about kind of the nature of today's episode, because there's a dilemma in my mind, and if you're not really interested in this kind of discussion, then I suggest you just move straight to the episode itself, which starts, you know, a few minutes from now. You just scroll forward and find it. But today I am talking to Mait, the founder CEO of Linguist, which is a language learning app. It's online as well, online application, also for the phone, and it's very sophisticated flashcards. And, you know, Mait was such an interesting character to talk to, because normally in language learning, people have a pretty direct route to languages. You know, either they're in the educational space, or they're in the linguistics space, or in the, you know, even in startup space. But Mait, he was part of the team who discovered the Higgs boson at CERN. He's basically a nuclear physicist. And I was like, what? How does a nuclear physicist get into languages? So we got to talk a little bit about that. That's very interesting. And also, I kind of asked him a lot of questions about how a high-level physicist would see language learning. Like, how do you break that down and turn that into an application that can hypercharge human performance, which is really what Linguist is trying to do. They're trying to build a model of how we can learn things faster, because if humans in general can learn things faster, then we can save more time, we can be more effective, we can be more efficient, and that's kind of their motto, so, or their mission statement, and they're starting out with languages. But you hear much more about it in the episode. What I just want to disclose, first of all, is that I do have a professional relationship with Linguist. They are paying me to do some advertising of their product on Actual Fluency. Not this episode specifically, I just want to make that clear. They haven't paid me to, they haven't paid to be on the podcast. It doesn't work like that. And that's why I wanted to chat with you for a few minutes today, because there's a balance in the language world and in podcasting, and it's an interesting balance. But my dilemma is basically that there are a lot of companies in the language world that I want to support, and I want to kind of highlight and give them a chance to share their vision, their story. But at the same time, I want it to be interesting for you as a listener. I want you to take something away from it. I don't want it to be like an hour-long sales pitch. Sometimes the episodes that I have done with companies in the past have probably crossed over into that, just because the founder wasn't interesting enough, or the stories that we went into weren't really that deep. And obviously, that's my failure as a host. I should really have been better. But in this episode, I felt like we had a really good discussion. The only reason that I kind of bring out this disclaimer in the beginning is that we do everything we talk about is surrounding Linguist, and it wasn't my intention originally. And every time I invite people on, I always make it clear, you know, this is supposed to be about the person, and we can definitely talk about any kind of projects. You're free to mention names or anything. It's not like, you know, we're not putting an embargo on sponsorships. It's not we're not censoring, because we want to support everyone, and we want to help each other grow stronger in the industry, and that way we all stand to benefit. And actually, I think Linguists are doing some really cool stuff that, I mean, you'll make your mind up yourself when you go through it and you check out their website, of course. But I just wanted to tell you that and just let you know that we are working together professionally. But that was after the episode was recorded, first of all. And like I said, they didn't pay to be on the podcast. In the future, I definitely want to feature more companies. So if you have an interesting language learning company and you want to come on the podcast and you know, preferably in the view of an interesting story Actually, also a few episodes ago, Jonty, who I just met in Montreal, a great guy, came on the show to talk about his story of learning his heritage language and developing an app to do that himself, and obviously trying to build that app into a more universal app that everyone could use for any language. He also mentions that in the episode, and obviously he gained some publicity for that. That's not something that was... that's not edited out or anything. I genuinely want to support people with this podcast. But obviously, it can't be like a 1-hour pitch fest either. You know, we want to put a good balance in. And I have to mention Italki as well in this breath. They've just been so supportive, and they're sponsoring the podcast, as you heard in the beginning. And so there are professional relationships, but just wanted to clarify, or maybe in case some people are wondering. I would never promote or talk about companies that I had any kind of doubts about. So if they were doing shady things, if they're doing, trying to rip off other people, or, you know, they basically if there were any kind of red flags, I wouldn't feature them on the show. And I certainly wouldn't publish an episode that was pretty much all focused around what they were doing as a company. So I hope you enjoy it, and I hope that made sense. And sorry for waffling on a bit there. And can't wait to see you in the next episode. All right, mate. Well, welcome to the Actual Fluency Podcast. I'm excited to talk to you today and learn a little bit more about what you're up to. But first, do you want to give the listeners a little background to who you are, where you're from, and how you ended up in linguists?
Hello, everybody. Yes, I might. Thanks, Christoph, for inviting me to this podcast. I'm that kind of person who is a little bit embarrassed to talk about myself, so you probably have to help me with some questions.
No worries. So, what's your backstory? Like, how did you end up where you are today?
Today, I'm building a startup, a language learning startup, which has actually bigger mission to accomplish. Our goal is to accelerate human learning, and language learning is just the first step of it. What brought me into this journey was that I didn't know languages very well. I had hard times learning them at school. I learned Russian. Everybody in the post-Soviet countries had to learn Russian for 10 years, and 99.9% of them didn't succeed, and I was one of them. It's like a huge social experiment: how to learn things so that you don't learn anything.
Right.
And I had this hard journey with English as well, and then I thought that I would better study physics, something that I didn't have to learn much to. Do the exercises, and I became a physicist, and somehow I ended up working at the Center of European Nuclear Research, CERN. Maybe many people have heard about it, because 6 years ago, there was one of the biggest discoveries in this century. We discovered the Higgs boson, the so-called Card particle, and yeah, this is my background. It's a funny jump from physics to a language learning application.
You know, funny story, I'm totally opposite. So when I did physics in high school, it was by far the worst subject that I ever did. And I never, because also I'm very weak at maths. Like, do some basic calculations and stuff. But when you got into like the integrals and the calculus and all that, I was like, no way, I don't any of this. And so physics, as you can imagine, was just a one long struggle. But to me, languages were always easy because, well, it's just the way people speak. You know, it's like you go out to the street, that's how it is. But in physics, it's all this like theories, and you're telling me there's all these invisible stuff going around. You know, it's just so theoretical that I just never really got into it. I like the cool experiments, but the actual learning I just strayed away from. So that's pretty funny. Yeah. But also, like, that must be quite a jump then. What made you return to the language topic? You say you want to kind of improve human learning, but you could have chosen any topic, I assume.
Hey, yes, it's a funny thing that if you have a problem, then you try to solve your problem. And if I didn't manage to learn languages at school, then it was such a problem to me that I thought that I have to solve it. So maybe at some point of your life, you decide that you will start doing physics startups. You never know.
Well, maybe you'll make some physics software down the road to teach physics. Yeah. That would be quite a nice turnaround.
Yes. But actually, yeah, in the long term, we may drift to that direction as well, because what I really got interested in was that if people learn some things for a long time and they do not succeed, and any person has some kind of memories that he tried to learn something, it was super hard, didn't achieve, spent hours and hours, was very demotivated. And if I started to think about the time that people spend on learning, I thought that now when we have very cool technology, when we have machine learning, when we can discover unknown particles in the huge mess of data at CERN, we have these tools. And actually, would it be possible to utilize these tools to accelerate human learning? And I started to calculate that if I would have a magic tool that helps me to make decision when and what exactly I have to review and repeat, how quickly it would be possible to learn a new language. I did some statistics, and it was CERN was a fantastic place to do it, because CERN had one of the biggest computer resources in the world. and even if I run some of my hobby project there, then I had some resources that otherwise people do not have, and also some skills to analyze the data. So I thought that if I want to learn, for example, French as a new language, then it would be important for me to know what the language actually is, what are actually the words that people are using. Because if you take a textbook, then there are thousands of words, but you do not know whether they are actually the most important ones to learn right now. Mm. If you, for example, take a word to, and this is a real example that I bought a book, to Learn French in 24 Hours.
Wow. And
in the first chapter, there was a conversation about working in a garbage recycling factory. And it sounded very odd to me. How often do I use this garbage recycling factory in my native language or in English? Almost never.
Yeah, exactly.
And if I use the same time of learning this for something that is like beer or even some curse words, then I would spend my time million times more efficiently. And if I always make this decision, then the total learning time should be much, much smaller. Mm. And I calculated that given all of the words which are out there, how frequently they appear in the language, what is the capacity, my learning capacity, ideally, I figured out that it would be possible to learn a new language in 200 hours. And it was so small compared to the my previous experience of 10 years learning Russian without right. learning anything, and 20 years learning English, not being still fluent. It seems so amazing that it actually can be so short that I thought that I have to build a product for it or test it out for myself. Mm. And then I started to build the software for myself. So right. this is how hobbies take off.
Yeah, exactly. But how did you account for things like grammar and like the other parts of the language, like that wasn't just the words?
I did pretty complicated stuff. Not all of it didn't work out. But basically, I can count the grammar in the same way that I, for example, take all of the sentences and I translate them into grammatical concepts, so that I replace every word with some grammatical concept, and I get some like a meta sentence of grammar. Mm-hmm. And I can do these frequency analysis about this grammar concept as well, to see what kind of different grammar constructions are used. And I found out that actually the most frequent ones are not those that are used for the learning in the first year normally, like if sentences and things that really help you to speak.
Right, that's very interesting, and I'm sure a lot of people who are in the technical space and things are perking up now with this question, because I think the flaw of often when you see, let's say, language learning trying to be decoded or like simplified into a system or some kind of rule, often it seems to be very much heavily focused on individual words, and you saying that, well, okay, if you learn 2,000 words, you are at a sort of a fluent level, but obviously just learning 2,000 words doesn't mean anything. That's just facts you can pull from your brain. You know, anyone can learn 2,000 words in probably a couple of weeks, but the challenge is really producing language that you can open your mouth and use and then understand what's coming back. So it's quite exciting that you thought about that early on. And that's obviously a while ago. So what's sort of how's the progress been? When was this, you said, you started this?
I started it 6 years ago, right after the discovery of Higgs boson. So it happens when there is a big achievement that you have worked hard on and waited for a long time. Then after achieving this, you kind of need a different challenge or
right.
try to explore new paths. But obviously what I was doing back then was like a hobbyist work, because I was not professionally trained in language learning or natural language processing. And now we have 100 times better people working on these right. problems.
I see.
Now looking back, it looks very childish what I did, but this is how companies get started. Like initially you do something quite stupid and then much better people come on board and they make it professionally.
Right, it's like the scientific method. You start out with the science and then you add all the but can you break down sort of how linguists works today in sort of simple terms, like how much does it differ from, let's say, I have a flashcard app that shows me the results of a query on the other side, and then it shows me that card, you know, every, I don't know, 4 and then 10 and then 20 and 60, 90 minutes, you know, it keeps kind of a fixed program. How does linguist differ, and have you, how much has it evolved since that prototype?
I think the main differentiator is the idea behind it, why we're doing it and what we're trying to achieve, that what we're really building is we're building technology to make human learning faster. And this is something that nobody else is doing. And if you look at the functionalities, it looks like a flashcard game or...
yeah, exactly.
It outside looks very, very simple. But what happens inside is that actually every single thing that people learn is analyzed so that for every single item that you have learned, we know what is your memory profile. And these memory profiles are very different from person to person. They depend on your previous knowledge, your memory parameters. Every single review that you do changes the memory retention curves, and all of the words, they are different difficulties as well. So every single word has different difficulties or memory retention curves. But if people are learning with this in our product, then we have all this data and we can calculate exactly when and what they have to review to learn most efficiently. And currently we're very much focusing on vocabulary acquisition. There are more things to come into the product, but I cannot tell when, because currently it's supposed to be more like an additional tool when people are taking language classes or they are living in the foreign environment. it's not really meant to be a standalone tool yet.
Right.
But the main main differentiator is that we use machine learning algorithms to accelerate the learning as much as it's humanly possible.
Personalized for every user.
Yes. Yes.
Right. So I'm not getting recommendation based on the pool of data. I'm getting, because I failed this 10 times in a row, it's going to slow it down and show it to me 100 more times.
It's very, very individualized. Mm-hmm. But if you do not, if you start learning and we do not have much information about you, then of course we use other people's data as well to help to get you going faster.
Of course. We'll just take a quick break to hear from one of our sponsors, and then we'll be right back. On this podcast, I've interviewed hundreds of language learners, some of the world's greatest polyglots and industry experts. And one thing they all agree on is the value of one-to-one tutoring lessons. And for this, I highly recommend Italki. They have thousands of teachers in all price ranges, and they even have certified teachers who have taken diplomas or have degrees in the language you're learning. So whether you're just brushing up on your Italian ahead of a trip to Rome, or you want to master Russian to take the exam, or whatever your goals are in languages, Italki has a tutor suitable for you. And compared to private tutoring offline, it's really affordable. You can find informal tutors down to $5 an hour, and you can have trial lessons for even less. So if you want to master a language from the comfort of your own home, and you even get a $10 credit when you complete your first lesson, go to languageteacher.co and check out Italki. It might be the best thing you do for your language learning this year.
What are some of the challenges of like growing it into like a, let's say, a full language learning tool that you, if you can use just this one and you don't have to use anything else and you can go from complete beginner to advanced? What are the biggest challenges there?
I think the biggest challenge is that there is such a huge space. People have very different skill levels. They have very different needs. Some people need language for writing, some people for speaking. They have different learning styles. And you cannot address all of those things right away with one product.
Of course.
Companies who try to do it, they do everything in a mediocre way and finally fail. So that's why we have taken our goal to build a really good vocabulary acquisition tool that can teach you vocabulary 10 times faster than anybody else. And then we can expand from there. And currently we are already introducing new features that we call a course wizard that actually opens up the vocabulary learning for the long tail of learners, the advanced learners, intermediate learners. So if you think about like an average language learning application, then they address only first 1,000 to 2,000 words.
Yeah.
It's quite useless for intermediates or advanced learners who want to learn it from medicine or physics or some other professional needs.
Definitely.
But this course wizard enables to do it in a couple of seconds, adapt it to your personal needs.
You can change it there, yeah. And of course, if you go through learning vocabulary, then you also kind of get it's in context, you know, it's filling the blanks. So you get exposure mm-hmm. to grammatical structures and that kind of thing. Does it take that into account when it decides what to show
yes,
you?
Yes, of course.
Okay.
It actually teaches a lot of underlying grammar as well, but it's not taught explicitly. So as you notice these grammar concepts in repetitively in different sequences, then your own machine learning brain puts things together and creates your own rules without us explicitly saying why it happens. And it's very fascinating how people's brain actually start to construct irregular verb conjugations without explicitly teaching them.
Right.
So, because
that's the beautiful part of language, I think, that brain sort of looks, it just recognizes the patterns and then uses them. And sometimes it's wrong. Like kids get it wrong all the time, you know, when they're learning their first language. They say things like go it and run it, and you know, that's fine. That's part of the process. But adults obviously do it too. So one thing I want to know as well about this is, if you have all this data and you're personalizing it in a way that makes me learn the fastest, how do you kind of encourage or set up a parameter where I actually log in enough or at the correct time? Because if I only log in once a week, but your algorithm has concluded that I should be learning, let's say, a new word every 7 minutes or some random example, how do you, because you can't control how much I use the app, do you make any recommendations on that, or is there any way of tracking that, or how does that work?
It's a very good question, because if you would have an application that teaches you things most efficiently, but you do not spend any time using it, then you obviously don't learn anything.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
And it's a challenge for all of the startups that they need users to come back, and they start building features that help with retention. They do push notifications, email notifications. They start to gamify it. Because if they do it, then users come back more frequently. They have bigger user base. But there is a catch that some of these gamification elements, they bring back people based on external motivation, but not because of the internal motivation.
Right.
They want to feel, they want to get the points or play the game. The learning value gets deprioritized, and this is what has happened with many educational applications, that they have started to run for less motivated users, try to attract them with gamification, but they have ended in being not in the education company but game company. And we took an opposite approach, because we thought that if we really are serious about making human learning faster, then we can only do it, make human learning faster, if we initially build the product for those people who really want to learn, who take care of their internal motivation by themselves. That's why intentionally we didn't build much motivation design elements, because we wanted to capture this user base and train our algorithms based on them, and try to unlock the human brain, how the brain really learns new stuff. And now when we have trained our algorithm, now we are starting to build some motivation design elements into the software as well. But we're not going to gamify it, because our ultimate goal is to build technology that accelerates human learning. And game is nice, but it doesn't help to reach the final goal.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's way more important to have the technology in place and an efficient method. But I'm still not sure about, let's say I just signed up for the service and I wanna maximize my learning, but I'm also kind of busy. You know, I've got a family, I'm working a lot. And so how much should I do, or does it not matter? So if I do less, I'll just be less efficient, or does the system kind of compensate extra for that? Like would I get slowed down more if I spent less regular time on it?
Indeed, this is the case, that if you learn more regularly, then your learning efficiency per unit time also increases. So that, because you reinforce more things, you repeat in vain things less, and we do not have yet in the product a full supporting motivational design framework around it, but we have figured out something that is really, really important for building educational software that is very precise measurement of learning itself. And we want to bring it to the user so that you will actually see that if you spend 10 minutes learning today, what was the value in the terms of learning for you?
Yeah.
Or if you spend 1 hour. And we think that when we have brought it to the user, then some users will start making experiments on their own with the different learning styles that we can use to make the product better.
I think that's a great idea, yeah. Because that's obviously also a problem if you're creating an app or some software, is how do you actually get people to continue to use it? Because people probably can do it for a while, but then maybe the motivation drops a little bit, or they just it maybe becomes too repetitive as well, and then people just kind of let it go. So that I suspect that would be a challenge as well. But you know, you definitely want the engaged users, because you know, an app like Duolingo, right? It's I mean, I guess if you're waiting for the train or something and you don't want to play a real game, then you can work with Duolingo and get barely any language learning done. But you know, and they focus just too much on the gamification, right? So they get all these people who are not really motivated. They don't really care about it. And if they even finish it, they don't really have anything to show for it either. It's a bit like going back to the school example where, you know, people are in school for 10 years and they don't...
Exactly. 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 And there are no good technologies actually out there, because all of the companies have had drive to do... the main difficulty has been that if you want to improve something, then you have to be able to measure it.
Right.
But it's incredibly difficult to learn to measure learning. If you think about final exams or exams at school or university, then these exams are made once in a year, probably, or once in a couple of years. And only a very small percentage of your total knowledge is probed. And if you get your exam score, this score doesn't actually tell you much. What could you have done differently half a year ago, learning this or another thing slightly differently? This is a if the measurement is done after a very long time, then you do not anymore know what were these things that influenced your learning efficiency. But if you can measure learning in every minute, every second, every interaction that you do, then actually it creates a very precise map. And we can say that if you learn today 5 minutes, we can tell you exactly that these words you will forget in 2 weeks, these words you will forget in 2 hours and 50 minutes, these words you will forget in 3 months. So we can actually calculate what was the total value of your learning time.
What unit do you use for that then?
Sorry?
What unit would you use for that then, to show me?
We use a unit that we have developed by ourselves. We call it memory curve improvement. But it's a very nice way to understand how much have we delivered value to the user. If we can have this, if we can measure it, then we can improve the product and improve the company so that we can maximize this value. We can make choices that, okay, people retain more, but they don't learn, actually. Right. So this is not a valuable path to go.
No, that's interesting. And what kind of future kind of tech, are there any technologies upcoming or any improvements? Because we've, you know, machine learning, the ways to use it, I think, has kind of developed, and it's new stuff being developed all the time. How has the fundamental technology and innovation actually changed in terms of language learning? Are we doing new things with machine learning, or maybe AIs, or what do you see kind of coming that could maybe make all this even better or change it for the better?
As much as I have asked, I have talked to many venture capitalists who have a very good picture of educational companies, including language learning companies. And I have asked this question, do you know any company who can measure learning, who measures learning for to have a North Star for the company? What do they want to achieve? And I have not yet got any answer that
wow.
Anybody is doing it. And investors complain a lot that there are educational companies, but actually they do not turn out to be delivering learning value. And it's very obvious why it's happening, because learning needs effort. And if they start to run towards a bigger user base, they start to run towards less and less motivated users who actually do not want to learn. And
yeah.
That's why they cannot build a product that helps learning, because the user base doesn't want to learn.
Yeah, that's pretty terrible, you know. But that's the reality, though.
It's a reality, but this is also an opportunity for us, because we have developed this technology with this mindset that we should be able to measure learning, we should improve the learning. There are university studies, for example, University of Tartu, they recruited 500 students. They made them to use different softwares, including Linguist. And the conclusion was that people can learn with it four times faster. And it was a couple of years ago, we have improved our products. And I believe that it's possible with this technology, it's possible to make human learning 10 times faster. And if you imagine, what does it mean that if you can learn a language 10 times faster than conventionally, it means that you can learn a new language in a couple of months.
Yeah.
You can learn a lot of new skills because this is a generic technology. We can apply it on history or medicine or pilot studies or whatever. And this is the word that nobody has more time. So we have to use our time more efficiently. And there are always more things to learn.
Right. Of course, yeah. That's universal for sure. We can learn anything. So that's quite exciting. I would say, I guess the challenge for you in that regard is that language learning is not just a collection of facts and figures. So you really have to, it's kind of a two-dimensional, three-dimensional learning, because you also have, there's input and output, and there's deeper elements, and it's a natural thing. And it's not, if you go to different parts of the, like let's say England, for example, people speak in completely different ways, they have different grammar.
Yes.
So language is quite difficult. I guess that's a good thing. You started with some of the most difficult learning people can do. And then, you know, if you want to go into learning more traditional things, like just, you know, facts and figures and kind of one way learning, then that will be much easier to do afterwards, because you've already done the 3D learning, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this was my thinking as well, that language is, it's the easiest to chunk language into small units or almost equal size micro exercises, language ties together all of the other education as well, because language is the main access to any education. There are 3 billion people in the world who are learning English to have a better access to the educational resources.
Yeah, that's a good idea as well. And if somebody wanted to start using the app, do you have any kind of beginner tips and tricks, or any kind of, like, maybe like I mentioned before, how much time a day should one spend on it? Is there like a, what's it called, you know, is there a critical period where if you spend more it doesn't really help that much, or can you overdo it? That's the question as well.
Initially you can overdo things. Indeed, the best thing is to do it every day approximately at the same time of the day, choose morning or evening or after lunch, or half an hour a day or 1 hour a day. It's the sweet spot for our language users currently. This is a recommendation that I would give. But it's important to do it every day. Even if you do it every day, like 10 minutes, it's still better than doing it 2 hours in one day.
Right. That makes sense. So consistency is better than the total time spent.
Mm.
And anyone can fit it in through the busy day even.
But it's actually designed so that if somebody is really motivated and they are willing to learn 6 hours a day, this is supported as well. And this was actually my very own first use case, that it was designed so that if I'm really motivated, I try to put as much time as possible into learning. Just the question is how efficiently the program can support it.
Right. But isn't there an issue there that, let's say I'm really motivated today, so I'll do 6 hours of linguist, but then those kind of the spaced repetition element, they'll come back at the same time in the future where I might not be motivated. So I've kind of got this snowball on my head that is coming to me like an avalanche on a day where I might not be as motivated. So that's another challenge that the learner, even if I'm motivated today, due to the way spaced repetition works, I might be setting myself up for failure later. Because if I get like that, I tried that with another app where I went really, I was really motivated, I was really ambitious for a couple of weeks just to see how fast I could do it. But then when I logged in, it said, you have 2,167 revisions due. And I just like, I didn't even know where to get started, you know. So how would you overcome that?
There are ways of overcoming it. Currently, we have not solved into the product, but we have solved it in the prototype level, which hopefully will come to the product soon. Thing is that if we want to accelerate learning, the good thing is that you cannot give always right answers. Some percentage of the answers have to be questions where you fail as well.
Yeah.
And it's approximately, you have to succeed approximately 80% of times. And the same level is needed for the most efficient learning and for being the best motivated. And as these two parameters are closely together, then actually the algorithm can control that even if you come back in a day when you are not motivated, then you still get the collection of exercises which fit you to that day.
Right. And doesn't try to overwhelm me with 200 new cards for the day, because I spent a lot of time the other day.
Yes. Yeah. Currently, this thing is not really implemented in the product yet, but hopefully it will be there soon.
That's good.
Motivation design element.
Yeah, motivation is important. It might be the most important, but
absolutely, it's extremely important.
You want to build a platform that kind of facilitates that effortless learning, so you don't have to worry about the learning as well as the language, you know. That can be a big issue for many people, where you sit down and you're like, oh, okay, I'm going to learn some French in the next 30 minutes. And it's like you have 10 textbooks and 7 apps, and you have 3 Skype partners, and you just get overwhelmed with the actual learning, even though you haven't even started the French part yet. You know, so I think it's a big, the mental part of it is definitely a big struggle. I don't know how you would incorporate that though, as a, if you went at it from like a scientific angle into some kind of technology, because that's kind of the human side of learning, isn't it?
Fortunately, technology can still help a lot, because this motivation and reward loop can be also somewhat designed into the product.
Right. So you do something and then you get rewarded for it, and that stimulates the brain to do more of it.
Yes, yes, yes.
What kind of rewards can you use for that?
The main intrinsic reward is that you can succeed at a certain percentage of times, and you can really use this knowledge, what you have learned.
Right, so the success
feeds
on. The feeling
of success.
Right, yeah, that's what most people like to feel. Yeah. Unfortunately, sometimes it doesn't quite, I mean, the other way is also quite devastating. You know, if you fail a lot, then you might just give up completely.
Yes.
That's also a danger. I don't know how you perhaps rescue people from those depths, but maybe you don't. I mean, maybe you just focus on the 80% people who are getting 80% of the questions right. I don't know. But either way, it's a very interesting kind of world, because there's so many, like we talked about earlier, there's so many apps and softwares and courses and solutions. And it's such a big part of our lives, the language, you know, that's basically human life is language. So it seems kind of funny that such a big part and natural part of our lives is so hard to kind of systematize and make learning effortless. You know, the internet's been around for a long time, and machines and technology even longer. So I'm fascinated by that, and I'm looking forward to seeing what kind of initiative you come out with in Linguist, and also other companies, of course, not just Linguist. But do you see any kind of on the horizon, maybe in a crystal ball kind of way, any future developments that could really revolutionize kind of the learning? What haven't we solved yet? What's the Higgs boson of language learning?
The next 10 years, very, very significantly. I'm imagining a future where, you know, we have space rockets to take us to the Mars. And this is an unknown environment where people go and they are in very new environment. They have to learn a lot of new stuff, and they have to learn quickly because it's the question of their survival. And also the artificial intelligence that will reshape the world in the next years. A lot, many, many jobs will be lost, and these people have to retrain. And the main competitive advantage of people will be actually their capacity to learn, how quickly they can learn new stuff, how quickly they can adapt to the changing world. So I think this thing that we're building, that the technology that accelerates human learning, is as important as building rockets to the Mars.
Because of course, I agree with you.
Human ability to survive in this rapidly changing world depends on the ability to learn things.
Yeah, so that's, and also, how cool would it be if we could cut the mandatory school time in half, or reduce it, or just make learning new skills much easier? That would be super cool. But do you see any kind of, you know, we talk about language now, there's been a lot of kind of reports about translation software, translation AI, and all this kind of, you know, obviously machine translations are getting better and better, but do you think that it will ever replace kind of training of translators or interpreters or people actually learning foreign languages for the sake of it?
I think it will definitely change the market need for translators and interpreters in written and in spoken. And it definitely shapes the language learning market as well. Nevertheless, there are some things that it probably doesn't influence a lot, because if you need another language to live in another country, then you can't do it with a translator. If you need a language for better education, you can't do it without a translator.
Right.
But
you can have like a translation earpiece, you know, that live translates.
Yes, but you can't build human relationships based on that.
Right.
So
that's true.
This need to learn a new language will definitely stay for a very long time, until we have the one language on planet Earth. That probably, hopefully, will never happen. But the language learning definitely remains. But what gets even more important is learning other things. And that's why I think this technology is super important, that we're building technology that accelerates actually human learning. Language is just the first step.
Yeah, but how long do you think that will take before you have the software to a point where you, okay, now we can kind of roll it out to other areas or other parts of learning?
We do not know. it's very difficult to predict how long things take. We are already experimenting with some things, but the main focus is language learning at this point of time.
Right. Well, glad to hear it. You know, that's why we're here, and that's why people listen to this podcast. So thank you so much for coming on the show and talking more about machine learning and the future of language learning as well, and linguists. And it's very exciting to see such a. I mean, it looks so simple on the surface, but obviously there's a lot going on underneath, and I can't wait to see how you can build that next level that we mentioned, that how to go from vocabulary acquisition to actually language acquisition, which is for me the big puzzle. And I think there's so many ways to do it today, and I haven't seen any integral way to do it in just one place or with one method. So that's going to be very exciting to see going forward. So thank you so much for coming on, and where can people find out more about you or Linguist?
Thank you for inviting me into this podcast, and I'm happy people to come into our site, linguist.com, and if they learn, they also know that they contribute to the development of application that accelerates learning.
That's great. And do you ever publish any of this data, like any aha revelations?
We will do, but we will definitely do. We have some collaborations with universities who want to publish things based on our data. But I cannot tell you exactly when and what, but stay tuned.
That's all right. We'll stay out for it. So linguist.com.
Yes.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Christoph.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Actual Fluency Podcast. I really appreciate having you here today. Just before you leave, I just want to give a quick shout out to today's sponsor, which is italki. Italki is a tutoring platform where you can find affordable tutors for every language in the world, pretty much. So get started today and get a free $10 credit when you book your first lesson. If you go to actualfluency.com/italki, that's spelled italki. So give it a go and feel how tutoring can really boost and enhance your language learning.